I wanted to introduce you to my friend, Andrew Poudois. My name is Lee Benz, and I'm the Home Scholar. Very glad that you're joining us for this presentation. I'm sure that you will come to understand how to succeed in college writing. Your children will use it every day in college classes and could even use these skills in their careers later on. So you're going to hear some expert advice to help your teen with life after high school. But first, let me introduce you to my good friend, Andrew Poudois of the Institute for Excellence in Writing. As I mentioned before many of you got here today, I actually used IEW with my own children, and I recommend his curriculum often. Now, there are other things that in the world that I recommend, but this is the one that I actually used myself, was his curriculum. My husband and I have had dinner with him a few times, and yes, it is true, Andrew really is as charming and witty as you might expect. So if you if you don't already know him, Andrew Poudois is the director for the Institute for Excellence in Writing. He and his wife, Robin, have homeschooled their 7 children and are now the proud grandparents of 10, making their home in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I'm totally jealous. I only have 1 grandchild at this time, so he wins. He does a lot of traveling and speaking around the world, and he addresses issues related to teaching, writing, thinking, spelling, music, with clarity, insight, practical experience, and lots of humor. I promise you will not fall asleep. His seminars for parents and students and teachers have helped transform reluctant writers into equipped educators with powerful tools to dramatically improve students' skills. And I know that that's going to happen today as well. So I would love for you to all chime in on chat and just say welcome to Andrew Poudois for the Institute for Excellence in Writing. And thank you for being here, Andrew. I really appreciate you sharing with us today. And I understand you've given me permission to interrupt you on occasion.
That's great. So let me just re-say what I did say about you and me, and the fact that we always see so well, you know, we have a very common, I think, shared vision about, you know, how to do what you need to do and want to do and call it whatever you need to make the transcript work and play the paperwork game properly. And I meet so many people out on the road anywhere who have loved having your materials, your, you know, personal service. So
thank you.
You're doing great work, and it's always nice to have you around. So yes, as I'm going through here, the presentation, there's a lot we're going to cover, but if you've got some ideas, just jump right on in. And if you've got a question that you think is appropriate to the content, jump right on in. And I hope everybody does register for our drawing, because we are happy to be giving away 3 whole sets. And I have to say, Lee, this new high school essay intensive, is actually so much better than the one you used, you know, what was it, 10 years ago?
Yes. I have to say, Andrew, when I was sick one time and you'd given me the newer version, and I watched it all in one sitting because I was sick anyway, couldn't get up off the couch. And it was so good. I kept yelling at my husband, "You've got to come in here. This is so excellent." And I really did. I loved it. I loved it.
Well, it's fun to be able to redo a product, especially when you've learned so much, you know, over the years of teaching and helping people and answering questions and refining. And of course, one reason we had to redo it is because, as you know, the SAT and the ACT both changed the nature of the essay. And so we had to adjust that. And I'm expecting they'll probably change again, you know, sooner or later. But we can probably $6 million man and the bionic woman. I remember those shows. That's
shows our age.
Yeah, definitely showing our age, but can't complain about that. Well, shall we jump in and start?
I say yes. Let's go.
All right. So this is a kind of hybrid thing we put together just for Lee's guests here, strategies for winning the college writing game. We're going to be talking about essay writing in general, and then we'll talk a little bit about the college application essay, which I know you've been coaching people on for many, many years. And so, you know, of course, we're going to talk about, you know, what is an essay, and then look at kind of through the lens of almost a classical rhetoric view, the three tasks that any essay writer has to work through. One is how to know what to say, how to come up with content, you know, figuring out what to say. That's often called invention, because you have to put together the ideas. And so that's usually the first thing people come up against. You know, they have a blank screen or a blank paper, and they've got an essay prompt or a question or an assignment, and they have to say, okay, well, what am I going to write? The second problem is, okay, how do I organize this content? And that is often called arrangement. And so we'll be talking about some various structures that students can choose from, templates or models to plan an essay. We'll talk about elocution, which then would be how to say what you're saying in a more elegant, stylish, sophisticated, appropriate way. So these three canons of rhetoric, invention, arrangement, and elocution, are essentially what we teach. We use different words often. Our program, as you know, is called Teaching Writing, Structure, and Style. And so that's arrangement and elocution, structure and style. And then embedded throughout all the models is the method of thinking of what to say, coming up and organizing the content. We'll talk then about the college application essay, a little bit of secret advice there on writing college papers, and a little bit of advice on documentation. And hopefully we'll have time for questions. I would be very happy to answer any questions that anyone has. So we've got the chat box, and it's got the little, as Matt said, the little red meatball. So people can indicate their, or I guess you'll indicate that it's a question I could
answer. That's right.
And so we'll jump in. So what is an essay? You know, I run around the country and do seminars, and sometimes just to kind of, you know, play with the teenagers a little bit, I'll stick my whiteboard marker in front of their face as if it were a microphone and say, so what is an essay? And see what they say. The most common answer I get is something you don't want to do. another answer is kind of like a long report, I guess. Occasionally you'll meet someone who says, well, it's this thing that has, like, you know, like this body, like an introduction, like a body, and like a conclusion. And so then you know, okay, there's someone who learned something. But if you check the dictionary, there's various dictionaries with various definitions, but this is kind of composite definition, that an essay is a short written composition generally expressing the ideas, beliefs, or opinions of the writer. So by definition, an essay has an opinion. And a lot of times people say, well, what's the difference between a report and an essay? Because they could have a very similar structure. And the line is when you're including in that an opinion. Now, we all know an opinion without facts to support it, well, that's just obnoxious. So we need to train students to collect up, organize, present, and document facts. But the purpose of those is to express an opinion. Now, when kids get into college classes, it's a tough world out there, because they take different classes from different teachers who have different ideas about what makes good writing, and different classes have different purposes. So sometimes the professors will say, you know, I don't want your opinion. I just want you to tell me what you've learned. I want you to exhibit that you have an understanding and an ability to represent this information in a paper form. And so in that case, you really don't want to include an opinion and tell what you think, because the professor's opinion is you're a neophyte, you don't know anything about the field, you're not really qualified to have an opinion, so don't bother. You know, so that's one attitude. But then in other classes, you know, they specifically want you to have an opinion and support that with reasons, examples, evidences, etc. And then sometimes it's kind of a combination, okay, but also demonstrate that you have a good knowledge and thorough understanding of this content. So it's very key for the students to be sure to know the nature of the assignment, right? Is it an essay which should include their opinion, or is it research which should not really include an opinion, or a combination? And if not sure, you know, ask the instructor. I think all too often, especially freshmen, you know, they get to a class and, you know, there may be a lot of kids in a class, and it's a, if it's a big school, you know, you can have sections with, you know, 50, 100, hundreds of students. And it's the student who will go and reach out to the professor and say, hey, I just wanted to be sure, is this what you meant? Is this what the task is? Is this what I should be trying to do for your class? And I think most teachers they appreciate that very much, you know, because, hey, that shows the student cares enough to take the time to ask.
I agree. And I think sometimes that can actually improve their grade, too, as they reach out and become known by the professor.
Yeah. And, you know, these people see so many different kids. I mean, you've probably talked a lot about the, you know, sit in the front or on the tee, mm-hmm. you know, be attentive, smile whenever you can, get your papers in on time, you know, anything you can do to make that professor's life just a little bit happier, a little bit lighter, a little bit easier. You know, if it comes to the tipping point and, you know, the score is 89 or 90 and it's going to tip one way or the other, well, mm-hmm. that smiling and acknowledging and personableness. And fortunately, most of our homeschool kids go into that environment much more confident as well, you know, interacting with adults in that environment. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's go over a few different essay types, because this is also helpful. If you know the type of paper you're trying to write, then as you begin the invention arrangement process, you get some focus and direction. One essay type would be expository. This is essentially where you are reporting information. The purpose is to teach or explain or inform. And, you know, that's the type of essay. It doesn't really have a, you know, thesis statement. A lot of people come out of school like, oh, an essay has to have a thesis statement. Well, it has to have a thesis statement if you're trying to prove something or, you know, persuade people or argue a point. But if you're trying to teach someone, it may be a very general type of thesis statement. And so the tone is, hey, I'm going to explain this to you. I'm going to teach you. I'm not trying to persuade you. It's a friendly audience. Most of my writing is in this area. You know, I mostly write for a friendly audience. Descriptive essays often are, you know, paint a picture, create images. Some of the well-known essayists like G.K. Chesterton or Joseph Epstein, you know, you read their essays and you're not quite sure if they were arguing anything, but you walk away with all these kind of vivid images in your head. Chesterton wrote an essay once about lying in bed and said, you know, lying in bed is a great thing to do, but it only has virtue, you know, it only has value if you don't have to. You know, if you're sick or tired, it doesn't count. But if you're free to lie in bed and do whatever you want, then your mind can explore and it's so exciting. And then he goes on and talks about how, you know, the only thing that could make it better is if you had a piece of chalk on a stick and you could draw pictures on the ceiling while you were lying in bed. Don't really know what he was trying to say, but the pictures in my mind, you know, very descriptive, enjoy essay. The author I just mentioned, Bertie, is Chesterton. Gilbert Keith Chesterton, often known as G.K. Chesterton. Everything he wrote is in the public domain, and his essays are just spectacular specimens mm-hmm. of awesome English. Do you know Chesterton, Lee?
Yeah, my son reads him all the time, requested his books for Christmas. So,
yeah, okay. Now, the third type of essay here we see would be an analysis essay. This is typical of, you know, academic assignments, literary analysis in high school, maybe historical analysis or political analysis. And this, of course, is where you take something, whatever you've got, a book or a short story or a poem or an event, and you kind of look at all the different elements. You know, so if it's a movie, you look at, you know, say, you know, the camera work, the costumes and setting, the acting, the soundtrack, the plot, the theme, and you would make some value judgments about those different aspects of the movie and then kind of put it together and recommend. Same thing with a book. You could read a book and talk about the character development and how the characters change, or what theme is underlying, or how the plot moves, and what are some of the subplots, and what is the author, you know, what do you think the author is trying to accomplish? So you often find analysis essays in literature classes, film classes sometimes, political science, you know, let's analyze that speech and say, okay, you know, how did it work rhetorically? What ideas was it addressing? What techniques did it use? So that's often the type of essay, you know, students get a little experience with in high school and encounter in some college classes. And then the next type would be an argumentative essay. This is where you would have a thesis. So you're going to prove something. So you come up, you read something, and you say, aha, I have a theory. I believe this is true. Let us prove something. And so you say in the introduction, you know, here's what I'm going to prove, although you don't say I, you just say what you're going to prove. Then you give all the examples, reasoning, evidence, you know, cite your sources and all that. And then in the end, you basically say, and so it's clear that, you know, whatever you're trying to prove, you've proved. This type of writing is also kind of an academic exercise. You don't necessarily see that it works very well in changing anyone's opinion, because as you've noticed, people tend to read things if they think that thing is going to agree with them, mm-hmm. and they tend to disregard things that they do not think are going to agree with them. That's mm-hmm. kind of human nature. So again, it's an exercise. It's not a bad exercise. But it is not something you see in the real world. In the real world, you're more likely to see a persuasive type of strategy in an editorial or an op-ed, you know, a blog post, something where someone's trying to kind of shift your perspective on something. And here, you can't, you know, hit your reader with the thesis in the first paragraph, because they may just throw it in the garbage and say, you know, what an idiot. Instead, you would ask a question that draws the reader in. Oh, I wonder, is this author, is this writer someone who I'm going to agree with, or are they on the other side? I'm really curious. I kind of need to read on and find out, right? So you get mm-hmm. tweaked a little bit. And then you strategically lead the reader to a conclusion. So that's another type of essay. And if you can understand what type, what world you're primarily in, you can structure accordingly. Sometimes you have narrative essays. Oftentimes the college application essay, it works out nicely if you tell a story about yourself. You know, something that happened to you that changed you in some way, made you who you are, or caused you to, you know, think about something differently. And in that case, you basically have that narrative flow. There's, you know, a characters, there's a situation, there's some kind of conflict, and then there's a resolution and an outcome. So sometimes an essay may tell a story, and then you've got your personal essay, and you've seen all these. I'm sure you have a lot of materials to help students.
It's good to review.
See which types of questions people are going to ask, or which types of questions the college is going to ask. And a lot of schools now use the Common App. I'm sure you've helped people through that process. Mm-hmm. And the Common App, they change their questions every year or so a little bit, but they're pretty much so broad and open-ended. You can really tell, you know, anything you want about yourself. And the thing, of course, is that, you know, while these are some categories of essays, and there are other people have lists that may have, you know, fewer or more kind of types, you also discover that there's hybrid types. For example, if I'm teaching something someone, I may want to include a little story, a little narrative to illustrate some point that I'm teaching. If I'm explaining something, I might also want to create some good imagery so that it sticks in the reader's head. You know, that particular picture of, you know, a kid with a pencil and his hair, tearing his hair out or whatever. The essay. Now, the optional essay on the ACT is a hybrid of analysis and argumentation. So they want you to examine three perspectives on an issue and give an analysis, make some make some value judgments, and then they want you to come up with one of those perspectives or a different perspective and kind of argue why your perspective or your plan or your answer to the question is the best one. So by doing these individually, students develop skills, and then as they hit tasks in the world, they can kind of say, so what this professor wants, is an argument, not a persuasion. I need to have a thesis and support. But what this professor over here wants is an analysis. He doesn't want my opinion, really. He just wants me to, give back the information that he wanted me to have. And so my opinion is going to be the same as his, And so you kind of live in that world of read the professor, make him happy, read the assignment, and categorize and plan accordingly. So you have the hybrid type. So those are some essay types. Let's talk now about the problem of what to say. The blank paper, there's a very stereotypical frustration, although these days it's more like a blank Word doc on a screen, with Facebook peeking out from behind it. So there's always a temptation to procrastinate a little more and see what your friends are up to. Although I've been told, Lee, that young people don't do Facebook. It's just for old people
like
us.
That's what I've heard, too, and I'm struggling with that emotionally.
Yeah, young people now do, like, Snapchat and Instagram, and they as soon as we figure out how to use Instagram,
that's when you know. Yeah,
they will then have migrated over to some new platform, and it'll pretty soon just be all of us grandparents on Facebook wishing there were pictures of our grandchildren that aren't there. So
that's right. Well, I will tell one story about an expository essay. I was in college, just for all the teens in the audience, right? I was in college. I'd been very sick with the flu and I'd missed a test. And so I went in to talk to my professor and I said, I missed this test and I'm so sorry. What can I do? Is there a makeup test? And he was mad that I had missed class. Apparently he had a lot of students. I think there were 500 students at that point. Anyway, so he said, yes, if you come in at this exact day and time, I will give you an essay test. And there's only going to be three questions on the essay test. And that will determine your entire grade for the year. And I was in nursing school at that time. And so I got there and the first essay question was write about the gastrointestinal system, which to like an artist would be equivalent to saying describe how to paint. It's just a huge, huge topic. Listening in, if a lot of other people are using up bandwidth, then it's difficult. So you have to hit the reconnect button. So I would really love for somebody who says they can hear to chime in. That'd be really helpful. We're waiting for you, Audra.
Should I?
No, I think if it's both, I think it's going to be them trying to reconnect. Oh, yeah. And there's Julie saying we're back. Got it. Okay, here we go.
All right.
We'll keep going, and I will type in my little story while you keep talking. Okay.
Okay. Super. All so, right. So the first thing usually students face is, of course, that problem of what to say. And one of the really interesting things that I have discovered is that many people really don't know how to think on purpose. Oftentimes, I will, teach a high school intensive or a group of kids, and I'll say, so how do you think? How's it done? If someone says, think now about this, how do you make that happen? And again, the answer, I love teenagers because they're very honest. They'll say things like, I have no idea. Or they'll say something like, you use your brain. Okay, fair enough. How do you use your brain? Well, you think of stuff. Okay, now you're in a tautology. You can't have circular reasoning. So how do you think? How do you do it? And it is an interesting thing to ponder. One of the things I have come to understand very clearly over two decades of teaching writing is that you can't really think a thought you can't think. You can't, produce something from nothing. All you can do is find something that you actually have, find something you actually know, and get it out of your brain. And so I always tease the teenagers and say, hey, if you want to get something out of your brain, then what you need to do is essentially imitate your mom, right? Because your mom knows how to get stuff out of your brain. If you know something and she wants to know what you know, what does she do? Yeah, she asks you questions, right? Where have you been? Who are you with? What have you been doing? Why are you late? How are you going to clean this up? You know, your mom becomes a master question asker. So the first category of questions would be the big six. The big six questions, who, what, why, when, where, how. And if you are looking at a subject and you need to immediately say, okay, what can I possibly say about this subject? You would start asking yourself these questions. Who, what, where, why, when, how? By the way, Kipling wrote an awesome poem about these questions. What and why and when and how and where and who. He called them six wise men that taught him everything he knew. And how he gives them a rest from 9 to 5 because he's busy, but he has a little friend who sends him out on 1,000 missions all the time. It was funny, I was teaching in Hawaii years ago, and you can imagine that sometimes when I announce I'm going to do writing classes here in some city, the people who sign up have kids who don't really like writing. That's why they're willing to pay for writing classes. And so usually I have to diffuse the negative energy. So I'll sometimes say something like, who hates writing? Is there anyone who'd rather, you know, scrub floors than write papers? And, you know, usually most of the boys, half the girls. And so I get this little girl, she's probably 7 years old. She was so tiny, cute little Asian girl in Hawaii. She pops up out of her chair and says, I love writing. Okay, great. Okay, fantastic. Now, does anyone ever have this problem? I don't know what to write. Does anyone have that blank page, blank paper? Pretty much everybody it's writing has that problem. This little girl, I honestly, probably 7 years old, she says, I always know what to write about. So I'm kind of curious, how does she always know what to write about? And I asked her, and she said, my mommy taught me. I'm really curious, like, oh, her mom probably got our seminar and knows about keyword outlines and story sequence chart and dress-ups and all that. So I said to her, so do you know about, you know, keyword outlines and story sequence chart and dress-ups and all that? She's just blank, no. So I'm really curious. So I said, what did your mother teach you that you always know what to write about? And she goes, my mommy taught me, if you just want to know what to write, you just ask yourself, who, what, where, why, when, how? Who, what, where, why, when, how? If you just ask yourself, who, what, where, why, when, how, you'll always know what to write about. So I was in awe. You know, here's a child actually being taught to think. It gives you hope for the future.
Yes, it does.
But, you know, pretty much anything that comes across your screen, from writing about an experience you had to write about the gastrointestinal system, if you start there, you know, what are the parts of it? Why do we have it? When is it active, inactive? You know, how does it all work? Where does it start? Where does it go? You know, immediately each question starts to loop things that are stored in your memory, in your knowledge, in your database, and bring them forward. And one of the things that I realized is there's different categories of questions. So you start with the big six, then you can amplify certain aspects of something. So look at the sensory questions. So what do you see? What do you hear? What do you feel? What do you taste? What do you smell? You know, the books on how to write well always give you this advice, and then teachers pass it on to kids and kids get it, but don't necessarily know what it means. The advice every writing book and teacher gives is, don't tell me, show me, right? Don't tell me he's a great guy. Show me, you know, give the story, give the examples. Let me see and hear and feel the things that will convince me, rather than just you telling me. And so I often will do exercises where kids write about a particular place. And so then they ask those questions in that particular place, you know, the beach, the mountains, you know, Chuck E. Cheese pizza, under your bed, whatever. What do you see? What do you hear? What do you feel? What do you taste? What do you smell? That opens up for them new categories of finding things that they can think about in their mind. And then the third category of questions would be what you might call the critical questions, the value judgment questions. So of all that you tell me about that thing you're trying to write about, what's the best thing? What's the worst thing? What's the value of that thing? What are the application? What's the significance, causes, effects, consequences? These are types of words that are a little bit harder with younger people, but really start to make a lot of sense around adolescence. Because, you know, they're moving into that logic stage and they're starting to look for cause and effect in relationships and making judgments. And so those questions lead us into then really the type of invention that we would find, say, in a classical rhetoric program. So I use these categories with questions when teaching, you know, beginning students or younger kids as kind of a ramp up to the invention skills that we might find, like I said, in classical rhetoric practice. This is what I teach in the high school essay intensive. And so these thinking skills are loosely based on what is usually called the common topics of Aristotle. So if you want to learn more about thinking and Aristotle's common topics and ways to think about things, there's a whole lot more. You know, a good amount of it is probably fairly, I don't know, a little hard. The vocabulary is hard. The discussion's a little hard. Part of what I've tried to do is simplify and clarify, and not, so people don't get overwhelmed. But the first skill is division. And this would be looking at a thing and doing just a basic, simple, analytical process of what are the things about, aspects of, or topics pertaining to that thing. So if you want to write about snowboarding, what are some things about snowboarding? If you want to write about trees, what are some things about trees? If you want to write about this poem, what are some things about, aspects of, or topics pertaining to this poem? And this is the type of skill that can be taught, you know, and developed through practice in very young children. When my kids were younger with me, I would have the habit of just asking them this question almost, you know, randomly. We're in the car, we drive by, we see a, you know, a cemetery, a graveyard. Hey, kids, there's a graveyard. What are some things about, aspects of, or topics pertaining to graveyards? And they might say, you know, headstones, trees, lawnmowers, flowers, ghosts, history, gardeners, burials, statues, right? And then, boom, you're done. You're gone. But then they've seen into the thing. Not just see the thing, but seeing into the thing. This is a skill sometimes called apprehension. Interesting, a little bit of word origin. I love to know the origin of words, and I think you do too, Lee. Aren't you kind of a word person?
I am. I'm a word nerd.
Yeah. So one thing we did in when we redid our teaching writing instruction style main course in 2015 was we changed our unit 7, which was called creative writing. We now call it inventive writing. For two reasons. Number one, creative writing is kind of a, you know, it's an idiom that has a lot of kind of baggage connected with it. You know, if you talk about creative writing or take a course in creative writing, it's kind of a modern express yourself, experiment with words, just kind of spew stuff out and see how it comes out. So we didn't want to get associated with that kind of progressive thinking. But a much more interesting thing is the roots of the words. Creative, the Latin root is creo, meaning to create from nothing. So in the Vulgate, in Latin, when it says in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth, it's that verb, creo. He produced something from nothing. As far as I know, only God can produce something from nothing. The rest of us are kind of stuck with what we've got. Right, we don't create anything. We we take stuff that already exists and assemble it into, you know, cakes or machines or essays. But we can't, you know, inspiration of the Holy Spirit notwithstanding, we can't really find something from nothing. We instead find something and from something and put it together, perhaps in a unique, different way or for a different purpose. Now, here's the cool part. The word invention is from the Latin verb invenio, which means literally to find or discover, right? So you find or discover something that's already there. You find something you know, and you pull it out, and then you elaborate and organize. And so it's also, by the way, the root, I'm sure you noticed, of inventory. So to do good invention, meaning figure out what to write, you need to take a little inventory and figure out what you know. The other one that's interesting is the word topic. It's from the Greek root topoi, which means place. We also get the word topographical map from that same root. Hmm. So topics would be the places within a subject, right? So your subject is, you know, this person or this war or this event or this issue or this idea or this memory. And then the division skill is what gets you the possible topics. And so you go to the places within that. The next skill is also something that our mind does naturally, but we can be more effective when we do it intentionally. And that is comparison. You know how you meet someone, you go, oh, he's kind of like this other person I know like that. Or you go to a new place and your mind immediately compares it with other places you've been. And you say, hey, this part of this new place I've never been kind of reminds me of this other part of this old place I've been. Or, we see something and we think, aha, that's kind of like that. Or we might say, that's kind of the opposite of that. And so we kind of naturally do this, our minds do this, but when we do it intentionally, it allows us to think better about the thing, right? So the truth is this, and I learned this from my good friend Andrew Kern. I think you might have met Andrew Kern. But he points out that really any two things, no matter how unlike they are, can be compared. You know, let's say you got a water bottle and a whiteboard marker. Right? Those are very different things, but they can be compared. What are some similarities between a water bottle and a whiteboard marker? They're both cylindrical. They're both made of plastic. Okay, the third skill, thinking skill, is application. And you ask the question, you know, to whom or in what circumstances does this apply? In other words, who cares, right? So who cares about water bottles? Who cares about whiteboard markers? Who cares about global warming? Who cares about, whether Hamlet's behavior affected Ophelia's mental health? Who cares about, you know, the gastrointestinal system? So, you know, that question, who cares, causes you to think, okay, that gives me some direction. And then that leads into the next one, which is what's the significance, the value, the impact, the causes, the meaning, or in other words, so what? Teenagers can relate to these two expressions, you know, who cares? So what? In fact, I met a teacher once who told me that he just taught essay writing by having the kids just ask those questions, who cares and so what? Who cares, so what? Who cares, so what? And come up with the content. So those are some ideas to work with and practice. And, we get into a lot more of a workshop style with the participants in the high school essay intensive. So the next area that students have to deal with is once they've got a feeling of what they want to write, they've answered some questions, found some things they know. They have some examples, some stories, some logical relationships. How do you organize that into a plan? And this, I think, is where you know, a little bit of effort pays off big time, because if students just start writing the composition, if they just start writing the first thing they think of, and then they write the next thing they think of, and they just kind of keep going, and they get to the end and they've written down all the stuff they think of, well, that's going to be rather scattered. It runs the risk of being random, disorganized, hard to follow, lacking a logical connection. That logical connection may be there, but there's these leaps in the prose. So this is why we, you know, at IEW, all of our classes and materials are very, very intent on having students create outlines and always write from outlines. Because if you don't write from outlines, you run the risk of this stream of consciousness, which is great when you're collecting ideas, but it's not great when you're presenting ideas. And so the discipline of outlining is critical. And then once you are willing to do that, then you have some questions. What are some different types of paragraphs? And what are some basic lengths? Target lengths, meaning number of paragraphs. So this little chart, it's a little bit fuzzier and smaller, but we just lifted the whole graphic. This is from a product we have called Portable Walls for the Essayist. This is available as also part of the HSE program, or you can buy it separately just as a little, you know, $7 thing. But the essential thing I try to help everyone understand is that length dictates structure. So if you have a teacher who says write a certain number of paragraphs, that's easy, because you can figure out, okay, five paragraphs, I need three topics. Six paragraphs, I need four topics. Seven paragraphs, I need five topics. Eight paragraphs, I'm going to need at least three topics with some subtopics. You know, if it's 12 or more paragraphs, I probably need to go to a super essay model and expand up to their 12 to 17 paragraphs. If I need to write something a little more than 17 paragraphs, I probably need a super duper essay, you know, kind of a term paper format. Most teachers, however, that our students will bump into in college or university, they're going to assign number of pages. So one of the things is what you want to be able to do is translate number of pages into number of words, and then number of words into number of paragraphs. Now, to translate pages into words, you have to know the style guide, meaning the font, spacing, margins, all that. And most teachers assign this. They'll just say your paper should be Times Roman 12 point Microsoft Word default margins, you know, double space MLA format or whatever. So they will give that. And so then the students can just paste in a bunch of text, look at the number of words. Then they can go and say, all right, how do you translate number of words into number of paragraphs? Or if the assignment is in number of words, 1200 words, 1500 words, you can translate that by knowing your personal average number of words per paragraph. So read some papers you've written over the past year or two. Take a look at the you know, average number of words in a paragraph, and then you can plan. So if I were in a college class and someone said you have to write a four-page paper, what I would do is I would say, okay, four pages, okay, Times Roman 12-point Microsoft Word default margins, 250 per page maybe, that's 1,000 words. My personal average is 150 words per paragraph, so I need seven paragraphs. So then I could plan an essay with an introduction, five body paragraphs, and a conclusion. If I needed less, I would do the same math accordingly. If I needed more, I would figure out how I need. Then I know, okay, how many topics do I need to find? How many divisions within this subject? And what's the purpose of the essay? Okay, I'm explaining, so I need five illustrations, or I'm arguing, so I need five reasons, or I'm analyzing, so I need five examples, right, for a seven paragraph composition. Or if I need more, I can have some subtopics, two paragraphs essentially on one topic, but a different one. So if you're writing about a person, maybe one topic is childhood, but that could be divided into home life and education, school life. Or if you're talking about things that affected you when you're growing up, you might have being a Boy Scout, and you could divide that into, the great things about being a Boy Scout and the not so great things about being a Boy Scout, and have two paragraphs about one topic. So I hope that makes sense. I know I'm going pretty fast here and rushing through, but this particular tool of length dictates structure and getting a target number of paragraphs is so, so helpful, because wherever the student goes, they get an assignment. I heard, though, Lee, this horrible story that some professors now, I can't hardly believe it, but I've been told some professors now actually are assigning papers in number of characters.
I've heard that too. Those poor kids.
Oh, gosh. You have to write a, 5,000 character paper. Like, what the heck?
Yes.
And I finally...
Do look carefully whether it's characters or word count, because, yeah, it can catch you off guard.
I found out why they're doing that. It's because there's this little trick. You can select all the periods in your composition and change them from 12 to 14 point font, and it will increase the bulk of your paper by approximately 8%.
That's awful.
It's awful. But it's the game. It's the age-old game. Teachers make rules and kids figure out how to, get around the rules. So then teachers have to make, stupider rules. So looking at the target length, if you can translate it into number of topics, then where to go in terms of how much information to collect up. Another question then is, what's a paragraph? How do you organize a paragraph? There's probably, introductory paragraphs. Most people are familiar with that. Concluding paragraphs with that. There's a whole lot of different purposes and ways to do it. One of the books we sell, and maybe Laura can put up a link so people can see it. I don't think I have a slide on it. But one of the books we sell is by, it's called Vic Pellegrino, A Guide to Powerful Paragraphs. And in this book, he actually has 30 different types of paragraphs. Believe it or not, things like, in addition to introductory concluding, there's general to specific to general, example, illustration, compare and contrast, chronological organization, spatial organization, all these different ways you can organize ideas into a paragraph. And I always say, you could buy that book and learn all 30 of these paragraph models, memorize the list, and practice writing each one a few times. And that would kind of be the equivalent of going to Home Depot, buying a very, very large and expensive toolbox, buying 30 very large and expensive tools, and carrying that around with you wherever you go. Some people need to do that, right? But I don't, because I don't use tools, because I have learned long ago that me and saws or drills just is not a good combination. So I don't use tools very much. If I can't accomplish it with my little tool, my handy dandy will do everything I need to do tool, I just pay someone else to do it for me. So I'm going to show you the handy dandy little tool. I, of course, am talking about the Swiss Army knife. And so here is the Swiss Army knife of paragraph models. It's called the TRIAC. It is very powerful. Everybody I've taught this to has found it extremely useful. We were just talking with our absolute top, most advanced, high-level online teacher in our organization, who does the Group C continuation and advanced, and she just loves this thing, this TRIAC model. So it's got a mnemonic. It's got an acronym that's easy to remember, TRIAC. I didn't think of it. I tried to figure out who did, and nobody's claimed that they thought of this thing. Someone showed it to me on a paper napkin in a restaurant, decades ago. But it follows the topic clincher model, which we teach in our system, and it gives you a very flexible way to come up with the content. So take your topic, shrink it just a little bit down, give a couple illustrations, and then ask some analytical questions, some of those value judgment questions. What are the impacts of this? The who cares and so what, right there in the analysis. And you can almost write, you know, a paragraph about anything you can think of by using this model. And it's a good exercise. So here sitting on my desk is a little pad of yellow stickies. We all use yellow stickies. So you could say, you know, yellow, here's your topic. Yellow stickies are common in all offices. Okay, now shrink that down a little bit. They're especially important for urgent and temporary information. Okay, now give some illustrations. You know, what do you use it for? Well, you can flag a book on something you want to come back to. You can put a note in the middle of someone else's computer screen so they'll be forced to see your message before they even check your email. You can stick it on top of your iPhone so that when you pull your iPhone out, you'll remember before you see anything else. And give a few examples for illustration. Then you can talk about the analysis. It allows us to prioritize in our life. It allows quick and effortless, you know, almost sure communication. There are some problems because, you know, they can fall off, but you solve that by not buying cheap ones, by the actual best kind. And you could wax philosophical. Yellow stickies are an extension of our mind. They allow us to make connections almost like our neurons reaching out into the world around us. They are a byproduct of an accidental technology that makes the world better. I could go on. Obviously, this is kind of silly, but if you can do that about yellow stickies, think about how you could do that with something that is more meaningful and more significant. So we do have the kids do some exercise with this in the high school essay intensive, but you know, try this out yourself. I'm not trying to sell you a product. Any of these ideas that we've taught so far today could be very useful, I think, for anybody. So try and write yourself a little topic restriction, illustration, analysis, clincher paragraph. You know, I would say if you're still teaching your own children, try and do this yourself before you try to teach it to them. But, you know, or do it together, you know, write a paragraph together. Pamela, our advanced online instructor, says this is the perfect one for use with the literary analysis, right? So the topic is how the character changes, or the topic is the theme, or the topic is, you know, the stylistic techniques that the author uses. All right, so here's a little advice that some people may be may challenge some people's, but I find it to be absolutely true. Not only have an outline, but once you do have an outline, write your paper from the inside out. Write the body paragraphs first, because you've got an outline. You know what you're dealing with. You've collected up the information either from your mind or from external sources or a combination of both. Write the body paragraphs first, then write the concluding paragraph, and then finish with the introductory paragraph. Why write the introduction last? Well, two reasons. One, it prevents procrastination. If you look at the introductory paragraph structure, almost everyone who teaches this says that you should have some kind of attention-getting device, right? Some kind of hook, something to draw the reader in. And so that's the hardest thing there is to do. So you sit there, you know, at your keyboard looking at your blank Word doc, and you say, okay, the first thing I have to do is think of something clever, but I can't think of anything clever. But I can't start until I think of something clever. But I can't think of anything clever. So this, you know, this writer's block. So the problem there is, you know, you don't know how to start. Whereas if you just start the body paragraphs, here, I'm going to explain this example here. I'm going to, you know, put this out. I'm going to give this information, whatever you're trying to do. You don't have to be clever. You just have to have an outline and start making sentences from your keywords. And then it gives your brilliant subconscious mind an opportunity to kind of think of some hook, some attention-getting device, some, you know, clever thing. The other thing is that in the body paragraph, you generally are trying to, you know, include some background information, some context for the whole thing. You better know which background information to provide for the reader once you've actually written the thing and you know what you've, what you end up with. So that's something you can try. It takes a little discipline. You know, if you're still teaching students though, you can say, okay, body paragraphs due, you know, Monday, and then conclusion due Wednesday. Okay, whole thing with introduction due Friday. So you put it into separate due dates. But if students get the hang of doing this and take it into college, they're going to always write better introductions. Okay, just briefly now, we're going to talk a little bit about elocution. This, by the way, is our own very lovely Kristen Boutros. She is our, was our customer service manager. She's been promoted since then. And so I said, oh, Kristen, I hope no, you know, model headhunters are watching this webinar because they might try to steal you from us and make you into a catalog model or something. But, you know, how to make the writing stylish. Probably the of the things we teach, the most powerful thing is the sentence openers. And if you get the portable walls there, or really anything that you buy from us is likely to address this. One of the things that most books on how to write well, you know, they'll give you these kind of standard bits of advice, such as, you know, show, don't tell. Another one is vary your sentence patterns. You know, so you say to your kid, okay, to be, write better, you have to vary your sentence patterns. The question, of course, is how? You know, how do you vary your sentence patterns? So we have these, and we put together this little paragraph. I don't have time to, you know, go through each one in every detail, but we number them. And so the first one, the number one, is a subject opener. So sentence openers make it easy to vary sentence patterns. That's the subject first. And that is the normal type of sentence pattern that we use in colloquial English. The problem is when we read something that's written with too many sentence, you know, subject openers in a row, that subject opener pattern gets a little bit tedious. In fact, if you look at textbooks and the way they're written, they probably, for them, you know, very often will have a high percentage, 70, 80, 90% of the sentences will start with the subject. And so, what are some other ways, though, that authors can start sentences? A number two sentence is a prepositional opener. On the next slide, you will find a list of prepositions for a number two opener. Our number three is an LY, or adverb, LY adverb opener. Predictably, a handy list of LY openers is also on the next slide. The number four opener is the ING, or what we would call a participle opener. And to do it properly, you have to have a comma, and then the thing after the comma is the thing doing the inging. And so here you see it, starting with an ING word, comma, a legal number four opener, that's what's starting with an ING word, must also have a comma. With the thing after the comma doing the inging. Number five is a clausal opener. And so if you learned a list of clausal starters, when, while, where, as, since, if, although, you can efficiently create a number five opener. And then number six is our VSS, very short sentence. And so having then a variety of sentence openers will help the reader be more engaged with the text. And it also stimulates a lot of creativity because the kids are like, okay, I've got to start with a different type of sentence. How can I reorganize this idea? It also helps the students not fall into accidental plagiarism. You know, there's some students who simply don't want to write the thing, so they'll find one on the internet, try to, you know, change a few words and mix it up, or they'll just flat out buy a paper, or they'll find one of these websites where you can just pay people in India to write your paper for you for $15 a page, which, you know, for them is a great deal. Hey, $45, I don't have to write a paper, and it'll be a decent one. It's a great deal for people in India for whom $45 is a good day's work. So there's, you know, there's a lot of that going on. The problem, too, that'd be the intentional plagiarism. That's a moral, ethical issue. Accidental plagiarism is when you read something and then you write it and you're like, oh, no, I wrote it just like that, but I don't know how to change anything. You know, teachers always say things like, well, don't copy, put it in your own words. But, well, how do you put it in your own words? Yeah, I don't have any words. And besides, the original already got the good ones, you know. So by learning the sentence openers, this is definitely really a key to help kids say, okay, here's the idea. I'm going to move it into keywords here. Now, when I write that, I'm going to try to do a different type of opener, maybe a prepositional opener, maybe a LY opener. Here's a nice list to choose from. So we always provide students with word lists. And these word lists then will help them choose, okay, here's a preposition. Ooh, I could start this sentence with this first word, you know, unlike, or because of, or in addition to, or according to. Ah, that's going to mix it up a little bit. Oh, I could start this sentence with essentially, or initially, or predictably. So we're very big into word lists and very, very helpful. We also have a couple tools. One is free, and that is our IEW writing tools. And you can get this right now on your iPhone or Android platform. It has everything I've talked about. So if you're frustrated because this is a webinar, it's going by fast and all that, you can go get all our dress ups, sentence openers, and decorations and stylistic techniques, as well as lots of word lists, all for free. With our IEW writing tools, and just go to your app store and you should be able to find it. And then we have, I think it's $5, I'm not sure, but we have a paid version that has the entire book we published called A Word Right Now available on that app. And it's a thesaurus that's particularly well designed for using with the stylistic techniques of our program. We'll also give you this list. These are some decorations, or what in classical rhetoric might be called figures of speech, or you might also hear them listed as schemes and tropes. Schemes are things which appeal to the senses. They sound nice. So things like alliteration, triple patterns, three very short sentences in a row, assonance, there's more. And tropes are those things which appeal to the imagination. So simile and metaphor, personification, allusion, hyperbole. So you can get those off our app as well. And then you try and see, you know, can you work in one of these literary devices into the paper you're writing to add some style as well. Now, one thing with this college application essay is you want to realize who you're writing for. When a kid writes this thing, he's not writing it for his mom. He's not writing it for some teacher that he may have had. She's not writing it for herself, even though she kind of thinks maybe she is. She's writing it for a college admissions person. And so that is the trick. Know your audience. When you write this college application essay, you want to remember, the reason you're writing it is twofold. One is to share yourself, to share something about you, your experience, your dreams, your goals, something that caused you to be the way you are, your hopes for going to school. And you want to do something, to come across as being very sincere, very honest, very, I guess original to some degree. Because, you know, you need to be interesting to them. If you apply to a big school, like Texas A&M, or worse, something place like the University of Chicago. I think they have like an 8% acceptance rate. I mean, Universities of California, very competitive. That essay is going to be very significant in terms of separating, the potentially great student from the generally average student. So you really want to be working on this and be genuine, showcase who you are, stand out. One thing about homeschooling, and I think, you may have type in a few comments on this, Lee. I know we're having a microphone thing, so we can't really talk at the same time. But, for years, 20 years ago, homeschoolers and college application, that was a tough one because like you were guilty till proven innocent. Like homeschool, how do we know you learned anything? How do we know these grades mean anything? How do we know the parents could teach anything? But now it's really swung the other way. And universities are looking for homeschool students, not only because they have higher graduation rates, but they tend to also have very good, solid GPAs. They tend to be the students who get more involved on the campus socially. So I know that most universities now kind of, oh, homeschool, great. Tell us more about that. Your predecessors have done well. So we like that. Oh, I love that, Lee. The essay is a selfie in words. That is awesome. I may steal that, but I'll give you credit. I'll say my friend Lee Bent said selfie in words because kids can relate to that. So you want to kind of stand out. When you're doing this thing, don't procrastinate. You've got lots of time. There's no deadline. There's no due date. But there is a point at which you have less time than if you have more. So plan ahead, talk to people, talk to your friends, talk to parents, talk to relatives, get ideas and see what they think of it. Write it and rewrite it. Rewriting, by the way, isn't when you write something, have it edited, and then you produce a final version. That's not rewriting. That's editing. Rewriting is when you write something, throw it in the garbage, and try to write it again. Now, that sounds like counterproductive, but the truth is, that is really a powerful idea because the second time you write it, you can sort through, oh, I didn't say that quite the way I wanted to, or this would be a more stylish way to say what I was going to say, and maybe even throw it in the garbage and rewrite it a third. I've answered the same essay question at least a dozen times. I don't really know because I did it every time I taught the class, and it was a 25 minute SAT prompt. And what I noticed is that in answering the same question time and time again, I went through phases. Phase one, wow, I'm really getting good. Phase two, ooh, this is getting kind of boring. Well, phase three, wow, I can play with this now. I know this argument so well, I can really play with it and hone and craft and do that. So don't be afraid to rewrite it several times. And then, of course, before you send it in to the editor, I'm sure, Lee, you give this advice too, it should be flawless. Get an editor or two or three or four. Your mother, your father, your best friend, your worst enemy, the retired English teacher from church, anybody. And get many, many eyes on it. Because if you turn in a college application essay that has typos, misspelled words, wrong punctuation, improper capitalization, a usage issue, an obvious, illegal sentence, what does that communicate to those folks? What does that communicate to the college applications, the college admissions person? Well, I think it communicates, I don't care. I don't care enough to go the extra mile to be sure that this is really, perfect. So mechanically should be flawless. So those are a few points. All right, we're coming in kind of towards the end, and we've been, talking for quite a while now. So here's just a few little bits of advice for once you're in college. I mean, you could try this if you're taking a high school class. I know a lot of homeschoolers these days are doing a dual enrollment, which is absolutely the best deal on the planet, right? Go take a college class when you're 16. And if you can read and write decently well, you're as smart as all the 18 or 19 year olds in the room. And then you get dual credit. So you get, you can put it on a high school transcript, and you can also get college credit. I know many kids who, you know, finished, quote, high school at 18 or so with an associate's degree already because of a combination of online classes from colleges, CLEP tests, and, you know, classes at the local community college or university that are for dual enrollment. And I know Lee is all over helping people do that. But when you get an opportunity, the trick here is to spy on your professor. So the first thing is try to find something that he or she wrote. Now, if this person is a professor at a university, they have probably published something somewhere in their field. It should be available. Possibly the professor has a website or a blog. Worst case scenario, they've got a course syllabus that may have some paragraphs in it. Even ask the professor after the first lecture, hey, I really enjoyed that. Have you written anything on this or similar topic? That might be looking a little suspicious, like brown nosing or something. But, you know, the truth is, if you can get a hold of something that person wrote, then you can figure out their writing style. You can actually make a list of things that the professor has done in that piece of writing or not done in that piece of writing. Some possible things would be, okay, what's his average number of words per paragraph? What's the longest paragraph? What's the shortest paragraph? If you stay within those parameters and match his average, he's going to be comfortable reading that. If your paragraphs are too short for his preference, that's going to have a slight negative impact, subconscious negative impact. What's his average size per sentence, average number of words per sentence? What is longest sentence and shortest sentence? If you stay within those parameters, you'll be in his comfort zone. What type of sentence openers does he have? If you've learned those six basic openers, or you may identify a few that are not on that list of subject, preposition, adverb, ing, clausal, VSS. But if you can say, okay, what are his favorite openers? What does he do or not do? Wow, he loves prepositional phrases. He loves clauses. He never starts sentences with adverbs. You can do the same thing. How many, you know, subject openers in each paragraph? Okay, half his sentences. Okay, I'll make half my sentences subject openers. I'll use the same pattern. What devices does he use? Does he ever use triple patterns? If he does, you can do that. If he doesn't use that, any words that pop out as being words that he may like, you know. If you were to read my writing, you might discover that I have some favorite words. One of them is juxtapose. I just love that word. I don't know why, but I just love to juxtapose this against that. Well, then if you wrote a paper for me and used the word juxtapose, I would be, oh, nice. You know, what kind of conventions? So you could actually make a checklist of things that a professor does or doesn't do, and then you could imitate his or her style and turn in that paper. And then when this teacher reads it, he or she is going to be reading it, and subconsciously they're thinking, well, this kid writes really well. This sounds just like me. So that's one thing you can do. Then you can use that checklist to write each paragraph of every paper and then get a better grade from that teacher, and then go and find a different teacher, find out his or her writing style, and repeat that process. Now, this may seem like extra work, and indeed it is, but it absolutely is effective. One interesting study that I was told by my mentor, Dr. Webster, he said students at the University of British Columbia one year wrote one paper and gave it to 12 different professors and asked them to mark the paper. And they did, and the grade range came back, get this, C+ to A-. That was the range between what the professors thought of the paper, depending on that professor, their department, their age, their, you know, what they liked or didn't like about the writing. So, you know, that's a pretty wide range. And so if you can get the leg up and win the game of make the professor like your writing style, you know, if it, like I said, if it's a tipping point, you know, B or A, B or A, B or A, you want it to tip, of course, in your favor. In terms of documentation, a lot of high school homeschool families have some anxiety about this. And what I would say is, number one, you don't have to remember it all. Nobody's going to remember everything you need to do for MLA format or APA or Chicago to Arabian or whatever. You just have to get the style guide and learn to be careful and follow the style guide. I guess the word would be meticulously, or people who suffer under style guides may say slavishly. And there's lots of good resources. Lee, I'm sure you've referred people to the Purdue University OWL Online Writing Lab. That's generally considered by many people to be the quick, easy way to get the authoritative guide on how to format a paper in an MLA style. Or if they're in the, you know, social sciences, it may be APA style. If you're in history or theology, maybe even sometimes philosophy, though less likely. But history and theology still use the old style, the Chicago to Arabian. And, so you don't have to know all the rules. You just have to be able to follow the guide. A little bit of practice, with that in high school is going to be helpful for the kids. Easybib.com is one of the few documentation generators that will come out. So you can actually just go to there, type in the ISBN number if it's a book, and it will tell you how to format that book for a bibliography or a works cited page. And then otherwise, there's fields you can fill in. If there's one author, you do it one way. If there's two authors, you do it a different way. If it's a professional journal, you do it one way. If it's a popular magazine, you do it another way. So like I said, you don't have to know all this. You just need to be sure to be able to follow the guide. And, even if you did learn the whole MLA style guide right now, it's going to change in a few years. So, and then of course, students should be sure to know that they can get help. They can ask other students. Every university has a writing center. And so any uncertainty a student has, they should be able to find the answers. The sad thing is, and my son-in-law, he graduated with a degree in Bible from Biola University. And he said to me, it's almost ridiculous how anal these people are about this. He said, it takes me longer to properly format a paper to turn it in than it does to write the blasted paper in the first place. That's kind of, seems fundamentally wrong, but then, that's the way it is. So, all right. So I think we're coming about to the end here of our slides. There are some things that we offer. One is, of course, this high school essay intensive. It's 6.5 hours of live instruction, student handouts. It has the portable walls for the essayist. You can also just buy that as a separate product. And then it's got some suggested practice assignments that you can do to practice for the SAT or ACT. We do have an awesome grammar program. Comes in 6 levels. You can do a grammar placement test on our website and know which level to start with. And I will say that our level 6 of the Fix-It Grammar is really advanced. In fact, I tried to do it and I couldn't even get it 100%. It was really very, very exhaustive and advanced. And then, of course, we also have our advanced communication series. Lee put in a good word earlier and said she used that. And so that's still available on the DVD. And then, of course, we at IEW have all sorts of things that you're welcome to join in to what degree you're interested or able. We have the podcast, the webinars, the blogs, the forum, the e-newsletter, our magnum opus magazine, and any question that you happen to have, you can contact us by phone, by chat, by email, and I have an absolutely magnificent team of awesome customer service people, most of whom I would mention, by the way, either are homeschool graduates or are homeschooling themselves now, their own children. So they're very, very familiar with the various styles and challenges and programs that homeschoolers find themselves in. And if they can't answer it, we call a 911 team. We kick the call to, you know, one of our older, more experienced people. If they can't answer it, they'll kick it upstairs. Eventually, if nobody can answer it, it'll get to me. So we are determined to answer every question you might have, either about our products or about using our products once you have them. All right, so we're at the last slide, which says Q&A. I haven't seen a whole lot of questions pop up there.
I haven't seen questions either, but boy, this has been just excellent. I really have enjoyed it so much, and I wish I could have been chatting with you the whole time, but I was chatting in the chat box, having a grand time.
Well, and we learn the technology as we go. Mm-hmm. I fear this was, you know, a little bit like drinking out of a fire hose, you know, a lot of information, but, you know, I want to try and help people, you know, see the full scope of what, you know, exists in terms of help for their students mm-hmm. with college writing. And,
yeah, I thought it was excellent. And I do want to say one more time again, I do recommend the High School Essay Intensive. I've seen it with my own eyes. I think it's marvelous. And while we loved the Advanced Communications series, it's shorter. And the High School Essay Intensive is just excellent. I really like it. And you do have a wonderful team. I have talked with many of them.
Good.
Yeah. Well, that's wonderful. So there's a question. Would the High School Essay Intensive be appropriate for an eighth grader?
I think so, you know, especially if this eighth grader has, you know, either a high aptitude for writing or has done a few years of our structure and style program. If it was kind of a reluctant writer type of eighth grader, I might suggest some of our other materials first. Mm-hmm. As a more gradual introduction, we have the Student Writing Intensive and the Student Continuation course, or, the Teaching Writing Instruction Style for the parent, and then one of the theme-based books for the student. But, I teach it as though, you know, you're right around the corner for doing, you know, high school, college level writing. You're right around the corner from the SAT or ACT. You're right around the corner from your first college class. So, mm-hmm.
And it is excellent for SAT or ACT essay prep. It's just really, really good. I will say, when I point people to it, I usually say, as long as your child is writing reasonably well. And that's because somebody else just asked, would it be good for a sixth grader? And you know, generally speaking, some of your materials for younger kids would be better. But if your child is a reasonably good writer, then the High School Essay Intensive is what I usually go for first, was my recommendation.
Melissa is asking if either of us will be at the GHC in Missouri. I definitely will be at all five of the GHC shows year. If you're there, come up and see me and we'll chat a little bit. Are you at any conventions this year, Lee?
Just the one in Washington. For those of you who don't know, we take care of my elderly mother. So we are at home much of the time. So I'm just going to the Washington one this time. I did just go to Oregon, but I'm just a convention just in Washington this year.
But I will be there in Washington too, so that'll
yes.
be fun.
Yeah, that will be fun. We'll have to get together for dinner again. That was a good time.
Yeah. Jennifer is asking if the High School Intensive is a year-long program. The answer is no. You actually, when I teach it live, I do it in one day. Mm-hmm. It's a long day. You know, it's 8:30 to 3:30, pretty much nonstop. And then I basically say, you know, now to make this easier, you're going to have to go practice it. With the video course, we include some practice assignments. Mm. So it could last anywhere from, you know, one day to several weeks if you did one practice assignment every week. You could really do it as fast or as slow. But definitely, you know, if you started now, you could do it and a lot of practices before the ACT in the fall. So Jennifer can, you know, certainly know that. And Rhonda was saying, how long does it take to work through? So, I mean, literally, you could do the whole thing in one day, 2 days, 3 days, 4 days. And then if you did the added practice assignments, you could do that. Yeah, I agree with you. Sixth grade is definitely a little bit young.
You know, and just homeschool mom to homeschool mom here. So what I did with my children is I had them watch the whole video from start to finish at the beginning of the year. And then we practice with the SAT or ACT essay. And then halfway through the year, I had them watch it again and to as a refresher after Christmas. And then they would practice their essays the rest of the year. And when my children went to college, they asked if they could take it with them, Andrew.
Oh, that's sweet. Amy and Rachel are asking a very similar question about how do you use this through the year? If you're doing unit study, the whole first two thirds is really about invention, arrangement, and locution. I go into much more detail than I was able to give in the webinar here. And so absolutely, those essay models and that essay, you know, that composition process, that can apply to any topic that you want to give them, you know, particularly if it's a question in history or a biography or a narrative of a war or whatever. We do have some practice assignments that come with the HSE, but you know, you don't have to do those. You could do anything else. The practice assignments are actually much more specific to here's something very similar to the article analysis on the SAT or the issue analysis and argumentation on the ACT. So we tried to make those a little bit specific. So you can, but certainly, I mean, I'd say 90% of it will cross apply to, you know, anything you want to do. Rochelle is saying, would this work for 15 plus pages? 15 plus pages is going to run you probably around 3,000 to 4,000 words, which is probably going to run you 20 to 30 paragraphs, depending on how you would organize it, what's the average length per paragraph. So what you would want, Rochelle, for a 15-page paper would essentially be the super-duper essay. It would be three 5 to 7 paragraph essays combined into one composition. So you would be at about 23, 24 paragraphs, and that might get you there. But I guess, you know, I would be asking a lot more questions about why, who's giving this assignment? Why do you have to do it? Is this really, do you want to do several of them? Or is this just a one-time thing? This is my junior thesis or this is my senior thesis. Mm-hmm. And I would be very hands-on helping the kid organize that much information just because, you know, if they've never done it before, that much content can seem overwhelming, but mm-hmm. Yes, we do have models.
Yes. I actually remember one of the essays that my son Alex had to write in college was 25 pages long. And, but because he had done so much work in, high school and, you know, throughout his first couple of quarters in college, he really was able to do it after that amount of time. By the way, he was quite surprised, Andrew, when he got to college that he felt so comfortable writing a quick essay for essay tests and everybody else was panicking. And he actually came to me that day and said, Mom, thank you for teaching us how to write a quick essay, which you'd taught him to write. So thank you, Andrew.
Good. Well, yeah, so the 15th. Rochelle, I hope you got that answer, but you know, I think we do have some good tools for you there. Joy, I will not be at any of the Teach Them Diligently conferences because there is a policy that those two groups have that they don't invite speakers who go to the other one. So you have to either be in the TTD camp or you have to be in the GHC camp. You can't do both. And this year I'm in the GHC camp for various reasons, but I wish they would just like relax and let people do.
Anyway, let people help homeschoolers. Yes.
Yeah, I won't go there. All right. Well, I think we've got almost all the questions there. Conrad, do you have any advice for someone who has trouble not trying to perfect everything? Let's see. So who has trouble not trying to perfect everything. Does that mean a perfectionist tendency, or does that mean doesn't care? If it's a perfectionist tendency to get it right the first time, then just mark it up and make a mess, and then you have to redo it. If you just don't care, that's a little bit trickier. You know, you have to work with someone. It's usually a problem of, you know, audience or motivation, or they don't see any reason to do it, probably back up. And that's a really deep question, Conrad. And I'm not sure how I can answer it without knowing your situation a little bit more. If you'd like to write in a little more detail, send it to us, info@iew.com. I can try, or have someone try to craft some type of answer. Or maybe you just want to call us, and maybe I can talk to you. I'm not sure.
I will say that I've had a child who was a perfectionist. And if that is you, Conrad, I can tell you what happened to Kevin when he went to college. He was such a perfectionist, he couldn't turn his papers in on time. And the way that colleges are run now is you have to email your paper in by midnight. And he was notorious, my son, about turning in his papers at 5 minutes after midnight, and he would get marked down an entire grade. He could have gotten an A had he turned it in on time, even if it was slightly less than perfect. And instead, he would get a B because he had to do it one more time over. So that's just my encouragement to you, is to not turn things in late.
Yeah. One last question I see, and then hopefully we're done with the bubbles. Misty is asking, my 16-year-old has taken Lost Tools of Writing 1 and 2, but we are wondering how she would benefit from the essay intensive, in your opinion. I think, you know, there'd be an awful lot of overlap and consonants. You know, certainly the Lost Tools is focused on one particular, you know, Lost Tools one particular type of argumentative, classical rhetoric type of essay. The thinking skills developed there are excellent. And then the student just has to say, okay, I can do that. Now, how do I do that, but adjust it or form it or shape it or modify it for this other type of assignment? So my thought, Misty, would be, yeah, no, that our high school essay intensive would be great. I don't know if you need it or not, but your student could probably go take English 101, 102 comp at a junior college or university in a dual enrollment situation, or take an online class if you don't have a school nearby that you would like, and let her take a college class and see how she can apply those things she's learned with Lost Tools to more, you know, modern or popular types of assignments. I think she'll see the cross application very easily, because really it's a thinking skills and the wordsmithing skills that matter. It's not knowing, you know, how to do every possible type of assignment that any teacher could possibly come up with. So I would just encourage you, you know, if she survived Lost Tools too, go put your get your feet wet in the real world of college classes and see, you know, what happens. And, you know, worst case scenario, you get a class, you get a bad teacher, you get some goofy thing. You can drop the class. You don't lose anything, especially if you're, you know, it's a community college level. It's not a black mark on a transcript or anything. It's just a dual enrollment opportunity. So, you know, I'd say look into that. And then Lee, of course, knows all about CLEPs and English CLEP, mm-hmm. and how a lot of our homeschool kids, they can walk in almost cold and pass the, you know, the English CLEP or the composition CLEP. So.
Mm-hmm. It can be a surprise when our children end up educated. We come so face to face with their weaknesses, and then they take this CLEP test, and it's like, wait a minute, you know something? That's amazing. Hey, there was one question that somebody asked us to please answer, and it's Brenda's question. What do you do for someone who has serious spelling issues? How is that handled when reading materials on essay exams?
Well, the way the grading rubrics are set up is they're very heavily weighted towards ideas and content. And then there is, you know, a mechanics part to it, but it's generally the least. The people who grade it are well aware that this is a kind of artificial thing where you have to write this essay on demand and you don't have any resources to use and you have, you know, 30 minutes or 40 minutes or however much they give you. So they are somewhat lenient toward misspellings, you know, and they understand, you know, kids that have dyslexic issues or whatever caused them to have trouble with spelling. So they're not supposed to grade down too hard on that. Knowing that in the real world, a student who struggled with spelling would have the resources to proofread a paper and be sure that they could fix it up before turning it in. So I don't think it's going to be, you know, a total deal killer. It might make the difference between, you know, the top score and below the top score. But, you know, you're just going to do the best that you can do.
Right. And also in college, sometimes you can get accommodation for your students, and then they would be allowed to not necessarily handwrite the essay, but type up an essay, even if they're sitting there in class where everybody else is handwriting and they're doing it on their computer, so that with that sort of accommodation, then you only have to get close enough to get the right word to pop up on your spell check. So that's the kind of accommodation that you might find at the college level. There are some colleges that specialize in providing the needed resources for kids that have different learning challenges.
Yeah. Lee, this question's for you. I believe this is true, but maybe I'm wrong. This person, Marcia, asked, if a student drops a dual enrollment class, is there no penalty? I'm under the impression that yes, because they are not in the college program where that college transcript is going to show a drop class as a fail. You know, they may lose whatever money they paid for the class, but it's not right. going to affect the transcript. Am I correct in thinking that?
Well, it depends on the college where you're going. So some colleges will give you a grace period of 3 days or a week, and you can drop out and it's not reflected on your transcript at all. At a certain point, though, most colleges will put a withdraw on your transcript. So the class will show up on the transcript and it'll have a W instead of a grade for withdraw if you withdraw. But it depends. It's like a college by college policy. So it's hard to know in advance unless you've done some research.
Okay. Misty, I love your question. I am actually doing the Oregon show, I think, for the first time in a long, 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 long time. And there is a possibility I could come a day early and do the essay intensive in the Portland area if you were able to help us find a location. So why don't you contact our office and then possibly we could schedule that in. I would love to do it if I could, but it would be dependent on location and then my calendar. So let's pursue that if you're interested in helping out. Thank you for asking that.
Yeah, that's great. Right. Well, I think we've had just a great time today. And thank you, everyone, for coming. And thank you, Andrew, for being here. This was just really great. It was really, other than our technical issues, I have loved every minute of it because I thought you were, again, hilarious. And everything you said, I totally agreed with. And so it was really fun. So thank you so much. Okay, right. Guys. We will talk to you next time. Thanks, Andrew. I will see you at the next convention. Okay?
All right. Thanks to you. Thanks to you, Lee. God bless.
You bet. Bye-bye.